Blog Talk Radio. very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But very wise, so wise was he.
Charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
Everybody, it's Monday. Happy Monday. We're going to be dealing with the Michigan governor takeover of Detroit. I don't know if I have some people call in from the motor. If y'all are out there in the D, Pontiac, Benton Harbor, or any part of Michigan where you had a financial manager in there, give me a call. If not, I'm going to play some extras that I got.
But let me bring you in a new sponsor. Thank you, Miss Sonia Perdue. That's coming to the underground. This is Pogo's World Travel. And we got a chiropractor, everybody. So here we go.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our home ownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, How do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
That's right, Jeff. All eyes are on Governor Rick Snyder. Will he pull the trigger on a takeover of Detroit? We have confirmed he will be in town tomorrow with a news conference. And sign of the times, we're out here on Belle Isle because a controversial lease that did not go through at city council between the city and the state under a takeover. Could we see a for sale sign here?
Yeah, conceivably, if the charter doesn't prohibit it, yeah, that could happen.
Doug Bernstein is a bankruptcy expert with Plunkett Cooney Law, and economic factors have steered his practice to the new trend of state takeovers. In simple terms, one person runs the show.
Part of it's done by cuts, part of it's by generating revenue. So you're looking at any source of revenue possible.
Even helps with seminars for public officials. And get this, under the new state takeover law that kicks in March 28th, there is a takeover in Detroit. The pay of Mayor Dave Bing and all nine city council members automatically goes to zero. Plus, their staff can be fired on the spot.
If the emergency financial manager determines that I'm better off without having any input from them, he or she can decide that to be the case, and you won't see these people again.
The EFM reports not to them, but to the state.
The more practical approach is meet with the council both individually and as a group, and try and make this a collaborative effort. And really, we'll see who's serving the citizenry of Detroit.
Yeah. And this is that new Public Act 436. A lot of people in town are reading this. And we're also looking at one of the biggest money pits that's been exposed in the Financial Review team report, how that red ink is continuing to grow. We'll see you next hour with that. Jeff?
Well, Jim, I can't imagine that Belle Isle would ever be in private hands, but if that is a possibility, any idea of how much that would cost or what the price would be?
That's open to whatever the market could bring, yeah. And it also has to be explored. Would the city charter allow that? But, hey, the emergency financial manager, if one is put in place, has to balance that balance sheet, balance that budget. One way to do it is to sell city assets.
Okay, Jim, thank you.
Is a breaking news alert from 7 Action News.
We have breaking news now into the 7 Action newsroom. We are just receiving word that Mayor Dave Bing is saying Governor Rick Snyder is set to announce a state takeover. This was just moments ago. He had spoken to our colleague Jim Kirtzner, who joins us on the phone now. And Jim, the mayor told you this?
Glenda, the mayor just spoke with a gathering of the Detroit Regional Chamber here at the Motor City Hotel and Casino, and it was after that event, talking with reporters, that the mayor said he was on the phone this morning with Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, and the governor told him that he will be in town tomorrow to announce the emergency financial manager will take over the city of Detroit. Now, the city has 10 days from this decision of the governor to ask for a hearing with the governor. The mayor said it's too early to tell. If he will do this, he wants to talk with city council members. As I've been reporting this week, city council has been working on a revised consent agreement that could prevent a takeover. That is not a finalized document. The mayor said he has not seen it. It obviously has not been presented to the governor. Council members have also told me they have not spoken directly with the governor. They have had discussions with state treasurer Andy Dillon, but as far as any face-to-face discussions with the mayor, those have not happened. But apparently, Governor Rick Snyder will be in Detroit tomorrow, I am told, around the noon hour to announce the takeover of Michigan's largest city. Glenda?
So, Jim, what will happen to the hopes of that new consent agreement? I mean, is there time now for that?
There would not likely be time for that. That's probably a dead issue at this point. The governor recognized a week ago when he gave himself that week or so deadline that he had only two options. He could do a new revised consent agreement, but let's face it, they did one last April. That prevented the takeover last year. That has not worked to the satisfaction of just about everybody. So the only other option is an emergency financial manager. Who will that person be? We are told that that person will not be named tomorrow, but this is the next step of the takeover of Detroit.
All right, Jim, thank you. So as you just heard Jim say, coming directly from my colleague, he spoke with Mayor Dave Bing, who says Governor Rick Snyder is set to announce a state takeover tomorrow. Of course, the city now has 10 days to appeal. We will have much more on this team coverage on 7 Action News at 5.
This has been a breaking news alert from 7 Action News. Stay with 7 Action News and WXYZ.com for further developments.
Yeah, so that's from the news side of things. Let me get to the political aspect of the game. I have the state rep that did a news program on Let It Rip, a program in Detroit, Michigan that discussed the issues. And she's running for mayor, and they had a gentleman on here on the show that assisted, I want to say Ben Harbor, maybe, in a financial matter. We'll hear it out and see how the plight goes. And then I'm going to deal with Detroit News, a newscast on Detroit financial emergency and what the people thinks about it. Then I'm going to get Governor Snyder town hall meeting. I'm just trying to get a better look or paint a better picture of what's going on in Detroit so we can have some type of an opinion. You know, if you out there from Detroit want to call, you can call in, but I'm going to try to let the news do its thing and let's see if we can find answers off into this. Here's Let It Rip from Detroit news program.
Time to Let It Rip on the panel tonight. She's a CPA, a certified public accountant, a former state rep, and the first to announce that she wants to be the next mayor of Detroit. In fact, she made that announcement right here on Let It Rip. Lisa House is back. Next to her, another CPA, a man who spent several years as the chief financial officer for Detroit and until recently was the emergency manager in the city of Benton Harbor. Joe Harris is here. And then there's a young man born in Boston, raised in Detroit. He's a preacher, teacher, leader, president of the local chapter of Rainbow Push. The Reverend David Alexander Bullock is in the pulpit. And, of course, Charlie Langton is here to preach the law. A little later, we'll debate the newest challenge to Michigan's ban on same-sex marriages. But right now, let's get back to the numbers. Lisa, the State Review Board said that the city of Detroit has $14 billion in long-term debt, hundreds of millions of dollars or more in short-term debt. But you say those numbers are all wrong. Now, explain it to us for people who are not CPAs, why you say it's wrong.
Certainly. First of all, I have a special message to the governor. Governor Snyder, with all due respect, the state's numbers are wrong. My numbers are right. Detroit does not need an emergency financial manager. Now, let me break those numbers down for you, Huell. The state's review team reported nearly $15 billion in long-term financial obligations for the city of Detroit. This past week, I've been talking about the chunks of numbers that's included in there that's inappropriately being included. Number one, there's $6 billion related to water and sewage revenue bonds. These are covered by ratepayers, so there's no risk of default there. They should not be a part of that $15 billion. Now we're down to $9 billion. In addition, there's $5 billion related to other post-employment benefit costs. Other words, meaning retiree health care. We have a solution to address that, but what the state is doing, they're accelerating 25 years worth of future obligations as if it's due today. Now we're down to $4 billion. There's a pension obligation certificate on the balance sheet, on the liability side. However, there's an offsetting asset for almost the same amount. So that number should not be included in the $15 billion. What we're left with is about $2.1 billion that represents interest-bearing debt, $1.1 billion of it. The remaining is OPEB for Detroit citywide.
But it's very complicated. Some of those assets, though, are borrowed money, though, to pay for that long-term obligation.
And
it's
if
still
you,
debt,
if you,
right?
But
is that true, though?
When you look at a balance sheet, You've got to look at your assets minus liabilities. That equals equity. So if you were to sell those assets, you could retire that debt.
You're not talking about selling the assets. Water department.
No, I'm talking about the net pension asset that offsets that POC, that pension obligation certificate.
But it's still a lot of money involved here. So are you saying that these numbers were intentionally exaggerated?
I would say it's painting a very negative picture that would justify the need for an emergency manager. And as I before stated, we don't need one. When you talk about managing the city's debt, it is manageable. The $2.1 billion or $1.1 billion in long-term obligations, we have paid in debt service costs $215 million for fiscal year 2012. And that's only 14.8% of our total revenues. $1.5 billion we're talking about in the general fund. So this demonstrates that we can manage. We haven't missed one debt payment, so we're not at risk of missing one in the next 10 months or year for
that. Well, Joe Harris, you know these numbers very, very too. You were chief financial officer of the city of Detroit for years. When you looked at the books, what did you see?
Well, let me just say that the trend was down when I looked at it a few years ago, and it's worse than ever now that I've seen the census. As you know, we lost 25% of our population between 2000 and 2010. We lost $100 million from 2011 to 2012. Revenues were reduced by $100 million. We lost $100 million last year. We lost $100 million the year before. So let's forget about, for now, the long-term liabilities that the governor is talking about, which, by the way, we shouldn't forget about in total. But let's just talk about what's happening in the last few years. We can't pay our bills on time. We've been borrowing money. Kwame Kilpatrick borrowed over $500 million. Dave Ving has borrowed over $300 million. Let's face it, the fact of the matter is we're borrowing ourselves. We're just digging a deeper hole. Let's just talk about the one. By the way, it's not $1.5 billion anymore for the general fund. It's $1.1 billion.
Fiscal year 2012 reported $1.5 billion. I got it right here in this report. This is the comprehensive annual financial
take
report.
Take a look at the general fund.
But the bottom line,
$1.1 billion.
We are in financial trouble. Now, you know all sides of this issue in the sense because you were also appointed an EM, first by Governor General Granholm, reappointed by Governor Rick Snyder for the city of Benton Harbor. One of the first things you did there was to fire the mayor and the city council. Did it work?
That is untrue.
Okay.
And that's the word. That's what you'll hear on Rachel Maddow. Okay. The fact of the matter is that the law itself removed the mayor and the city council. I made the comment, and people said, "Well, I did it." The fact of the matter is, they were removed. They lost their, not removed. They still hold office.
But they just don't get
the
money.
But they lost their authority. That's right. They lost their power.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, I did remove the finance director. I did remove the assessor. I did remove the building inspector. I did remove the customer service person. I did remove the human resources person.
So if I might ask a question,
yes.
Who then replaced those people?
Did you serve
in all of those roles? I mean, you wear multiple hats. I only see one hat.
That's not... You're making an assumption. No,
I'm asking.
I replaced them. I replaced them with qualified people. One of the reasons that the commission wanted me out of there was because I replaced the rubbish collector that was not the low bidder with the low bidder. We have better rubbish collection now than we ever have for less cost. But the fact of the matter is they wanted their friend involved with the rubbish collection.
Well, bottom line, when you entered office as emergency manager, the city was in debt to more than $3 million in debt. Did you solve that problem? Is Benton Harbor now debt-free?
No. No. There's no way that revenue of $6 million a year, we're going to get rid of $3 million of debt. The fact of the matter is the deficit has been reduced, and we'll probably do it by maybe 10 years from now, little by little. What we've done is we have a balance. We have a structurally balanced budget. What does that mean? That means we can pay our bills on time. We can pay for all of our operations without borrowing any more money. But it will take years. It will take years to repay all of the debt, just like Detroit.
Well,
all of the debt that's been incurred.
Reverend Bullock, that's the question for you. Does the end justify the means? If indeed an EM can solve the financial problem in Detroit, why not?
You know, invite him or her in?
Hugh, that's a great question. As a pastor and now as the new chairman of the 13th Congressional District, I must say that we just heard an emergency manager say emergency management doesn't work. The debt has been reduced. Why do you need an emergency manager to come to Detroit when the mayor can just hire someone to work on the problem and help to come up with a plan to structure the debt? It's amazing. When you look at what the city of Detroit is owed, $800 million owed in business tax revenue, $224 million owed by the state to the city of Detroit. Lisa Howell said it tonight. The city of Detroit has not missed a payroll. The city of Detroit has paid its bond obligations. And so this new legislation sends in someone empowered unilaterally to dispel democracy, right, to take away the right of the people, to make the vote useless, all in the name of a potentially failed promise to over 10 plus years somehow get Detroit back a financial straight street.
Reverend,
that does not stand to reason.
But, Reverend, the city made its obligations because it borrowed
because it
money.
Borrowed money.
I can make my everybody can make my obligations.
Well, we wouldn't have to borrow
money. The city owes all that money. You're just taking on new debt to pay current problems.
Charlie, the emergency manager is not going to be able to find extra people.
Of the state of Michigan to assist us with collecting our income tax revenues, to not cut state revenue sharing in the middle of a budget year, we would not have to borrow more money.
Why isn't Treasurer Wayne County doing that?
Oh, wait.
I can't speak to what the Treasurer of Wayne County is doing, but in the state of Michigan.
Benton Harbor lost $400,000 a year in state revenue sharing.
Every city in the state.
But
the state has a surplus right now of more than $500 million. And for a rainy day fund, well, it's raining in the city of Detroit. It's storming in the city of Detroit, according to them, thus warranting an emergency manager. Send us some emergency funds. When you have an emergency in the nation and the president and
you
the United States responds, they get right in
the
there right away
that,
and they solve
the problem with this 800, whether it's $800 million or $500 million, the problem with that is one time funds. It does not solve the structural balance.
I understand that. And then you have an $800 million revenue generated in the water department. This is a record amount. So these are assets here. I talked to someone who in the media. I talked to someone. I understand that. I talked to someone in media. I won't name any names. And they said in the city of Pontiac, they have an OPEB issue as well, but they don't have assets.
Now,
to
what
help.
Is
OPEB? The retiree health care.
Other post-employment
benefits. Okay, they have that same issue, but they don't have assets to help cure that problem.
Okay.
But they said the city of Detroit does. So what that tells me when you ask about agenda and what's at play here, Detroit is rich in assets. The water department just generated $800 million.
Well, frankly,
that's
not for the general
and
fund.
Jobs.
Frankly, every candidate in the race for mayor right now, including you, Crystal Crittenden, Fred Durhall, Mike Duggan, and Benny Napoleon, soon to announce, all of you are on the same side here. But what are you going to do? You're all on the outside looking in. Do you intend to file a lawsuit? What are you going to do? Are you going to fight, or are you going to try to work with the governor to find a solution?
We're fighting back.
Well, we'll work with the governor, but he's talking about displacing mayors and displacing city council.
No.
And trust me, you just
right
said it. What happened in Benton Harbor?
I did not.
You said that the law required that these people be dismissed.
No, dismissed is the wrong word. They kept their positions, but they lost the authority because the emergency manager assumed that authority. It would be the same way under a bankruptcy where a receiver assumes the authority of, and by the way, that's your choice.
So when you kick the
emergency
mayor out of office,
I did not kick
as,
him. The fact
I mean,
we already have a federal judge.
All right, exactly. So as we close then, if indeed an EM, if he or she is coming, can find a way to work with the elected mayor.
I agree with that.
Can find a way to work with the elected
council.
Maybe that is the solution.
Well,
everybody working together
to
solve the problem.
Safety. We got to fix the finances. We got to invest in our neighborhoods. We have to have strong neighborhoods just like we have a strong downtown. I love what's happening in our downtown. That needs to spill over into the neighborhoods. The people need to feel the effects of the positivity that's coming to the city of Detroit. And as a candidate for mayor, I'm looking to bring
it. Well, let's hope we can all work together
on the
same solution.
A mayor with no power.
Ladies, gentlemen, we thank you.
Well, now that lady sounds like she means business. I'm going to try to see if I can get some other candidates from that are running for mayor in Detroit or some of the council members, but if the financial manager assumes a role of leadership in government, then the council and mayor has no authority, then that's right there is treading on democracy. But let's take a quick break here. 347-838-9825. I'm just doing some Detroit stuff. Y'all can call in, but I'm just trying to get a clear picture from my audience. And then maybe tomorrow I might have my Detroit friends on to talk about what's going on. Be back in a minute, everybody.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I love you more each day. But the word got in my way.
Can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop, bop, bop. Yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Sound good. Yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it.
World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Did you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello, this is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have serviced more than 500 clients, national and international, from ages 0 to 99 for the past 30 years. My tip to you today is, if you are a business owner with at least one employee, including yourself, it would behoove you to get business life insurance. Why? Thank you for asking. 7 points I want to leave with you. Your premiums are tax deductible. Your policy bills cash tax deferred. Your cash reserve inside the policy is yours to use tax free. The policy will replace your income if death occurred prematurely. The company will pay the premiums if you become disabled. The policy will return all premiums to you when you retire. Last but not least, make sure your agent is well experienced in business life insurance. Stay tuned for more tips on how to use life insurance and annuities to help yourself today and protect your family and business tomorrow. This is Prentice L. Allison, president of SPSI. Toll-free number is 877-902-9048. I wish you well, and to God be the glory.
Sometimes I get a little lonely. Sometimes I get a little blue. There was a very strange chatting boy. They say he wandered very far, very far over land and sea. A little shy, and sad. Very wise. What he and then one day, a magic day he had my way. And while we spoke of many things, this he said to me, the greatest thing you ever learned is just love and be loved in return. Sometimes I get a little lonely, and sometimes I get a little blue. The greatest thing is just to love, be loved in return.
Seven, eight. 888-938-9825. We're doing this little symposium on the city of Detroit. Detroit, big city of dreams, but everything in Detroit ain't always what it seems. You might get fooled if you come from out of town, but there's a financial law in place. So I bet you don't know your way around. Too much, too many people, too much. Let's go right back to the situation in Detroit. This is from a news program. It's from the newscast on Detroit Financial Emergency. Let's kick into it right now.
Governor Rick Snyder declares a financial emergency in Detroit, and city officials are scrambling to respond. I'm Gary Miles for the Detroit News. Joining me here is Darren Nichols, who's been in the City County Bureau for 10 years and joined the Detroit News in 1993. Darren, tell me the origins of the crisis.
Detroit is a city that's been in decline for the last 50 years or so. You're talking about a city that has that at one point had a population of 1.8 million people and now has less than 700,000 people. You can point to a number of different factors as to why that has occurred. Both black and white population has left over the time, but you can also point to the foreclosure crisis over the last 10 years, as well as the decline in the auto industry as some of the major contributing factors.
And with the declaration of a financial emergency, Darren, what does that mean?
Certainly you're talking about a city that has $14.9 billion in long-term liabilities that it must meet. And as a result, the governor has declared that there is a financial emergency and that the only way to fix it is to appoint an emergency manager for the city of Detroit.
And what's happening now?
What is currently going on is that the Detroit City Council is exploring several options as to how they want to get out of this emergency. There's been some talk about a second consent agreement. This time last year, as you all may recall, the city entered into a consent agreement to fix some of the longstanding financial problems in Detroit. And so they believe, some members of City Council believe, the only way to fix this emergency is to enter into a more enhanced consent agreement, but there at some points there hasn't been any willingness from the state to sort of enter into that kind of agreement.
Now, are Mayor Bing and the council on the same page from what we can tell?
At this point, no, they're not on the same page. The mayor has not come out publicly and said that he is going to seek any kind of court action or even to try to appeal this. Some of my sources sort of suggest that the mayor believes that it's sort of a pointless argument to go into court or to appeal this because of the financial emergency that exists in Detroit.
And if the city does appeal, we'll have a hearing on Tuesday. And what would happen after that?
Then the governor makes a decision whether he concurs with his earlier declaration, and then as a result, if he does not believe that, if he believes that there is, if he concurs with his decision and accepts that Detroit is still in a financial emergency, then the city can take other remedies in court.
And what's next for the governor?
He will decide. At this point, he is weighing several candidates for the position, is the way that I understand it to be. I think he's narrowed down his choice on who is going to be the next emergency manager.
And if he appoints one, you know, there's this 18-month period in the law. Is there any suggestion here that Detroit could be fixed that quickly?
That's a very good question. There are some who suggest that you can put Detroit on a roadmap to sort of fixing its problems in an 18-month period. But again, you're talking about $14.9 billion worth of liabilities. Certainly that cannot be fixed totally in 18 months. And so I think some of the discussion has been about putting Detroit on solid footing within 18 months in order to be able to fix its problems, but not necessarily fixing all of its problems in an 18-month period.
And we've seen a little bit of a backlash, Darren, locally and nationally. How big do you think that's getting? You just reported a story about Al Sharpton bringing it up nationally. Tell me what you're seeing.
Yes. We reported this morning that Al Sharpton was on the Tom Joyner Morning Show expressing his frustration with the appointment of an emergency manager or the potential appointment of an emergency manager in Detroit, talking about how it thwarts sort of the voting rights. That has been the discussion over the last year or so. And so it is sort of gaining some sort of traction, at least nationally. And locally, you're talking about the National Action Network, the NAACP, as well as other community groups who are sort of expressing the same type of frustration, particularly given the elimination or the voting down of the Public Act 4 last November.
All right. Thanks, Darren. I'm Gary Miles with the Detroit News, and join us next time as we talk to some reporters about the top issues of the day.
Now, it's funny. It's funny that here's a great crisis for a black urban city, and what authority or power does Jesse Jackson have right now? Or Al Sharpton? Where are you so-called national black leaders that can come out and express the pain and sorrow of black Americans that's going through this tragedy in Detroit? Where they at? On Tom Joyner, how they outraged? Yo, Sharpton, by you being outraged, what is it going to make things move? Any action now from the National Action Network? Can the National Action Network bring some national action now? Let's go to this PBS break. I got the emergency manager and Governor Snyder on, and then I'm trying to bring a piece in with the emergency manager talking about his plans for Detroit, if I got enough time. And I'm going to do the town hall with Governor Snyder before the takeover took place. Here we go, everybody. 347-838-9825. If you're from the motor, I'll take a call, but I'm really trying to, you know, put this on tomorrow. I want to have a clear picture, pros and cons.
Now to Detroit, where the governor of Michigan announced an emergency state takeover of the city's finances today. Margaret Warner has our report.
It was once a bustling Midwestern city, alive with people, the humming heart of the auto industry. But Detroit today is just a shell of that, with widespread decay and population loss. The 2010 census showed one person moved away from the city every 22 minutes in the last decade.
It makes me sick. I want to leave. I wish I had somewhere else to go, because I would leave and never come back.
Detroit is also the poorest major city in the U.S., running big annual deficits and $14 billion in debt. All of that led Michigan's Republican Governor Rick Snyder today to declare a financial emergency and recommend the appointment of an emergency financial manager for the city, Kevin Orr.
And if you look at the history of the city, this is a problem that's been evolving for 50-plus years. This is a problem that now has reached a true crisis point. In many respects, it's a sad day to say we have this day. But again, I like to view it as a day of opportunity. This is an opportunity for us to work together.
Orr is a lawyer with the Washington law firm Jones Day. He's best known for his work on restructuring Chrysler in its bankruptcy of 2009. As emergency manager, he will have the power to renegotiate or even terminate the city's labor contracts, privatize public services, and sell some city assets. Detroit City Council has vigorously protested the move, but today Mayor Dave Bing said he will work with Orr to do what's best for the city.
Bottom line here is that we must stop fighting each other. We must start to work together. And so I'm happy that now I've got teammates, I've got partners that can help me do some of the things that need to be done in our city. Our citizens obviously deserve more than they're getting.
Orr faces huge challenges in doing that. Even police protection has broken down, and corruption has blighted City Hall. Just this week, former Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick was convicted on 24 federal charges of corruption and bribery.
For more on the struggles facing Detroit and the way ahead, we're joined now by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder and the city's soon-to-be emergency financial manager, Kevin Orr. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you. Governor Snyder, the mayor and the city council last year put forth their own plan to get the city solvent. Why is it necessary to do this now?
Well, Margaret, I appreciate them coming forward with a plan. The issue was, is the plan was not being implemented fast enough and was not going to be sufficient enough to resolve the financial crisis. So it was helpful. I urge them to continue to work on their efforts on that plan. But what I would say is we need to do more. And that was really the point of adding an emergency financial manager. And Kevin's background is fabulous for this. It's really all hands on deck. Let's bring additional resources. Let's really turn around Detroit because it's an outstanding opportunity with a very bright future if we can address these financial issues, and we will address these financial issues.
Mr. Orr, today at your press conference, you called this job the Olympics of restructuring. What are your most pressing immediate priorities? What do you have to do first?
Well, hello, Margaret. Nice to meet you telephonically. The first thing I think we need to do is assure the citizens of Detroit that we are focused on their needs as customers and enhance city services. The reason I said it was the Olympics because we've got to deal with issues regarding employee and retiree benefits as well as debt service, but we also have to provide services, key services, to the citizens. So my first order of business is to look into that and see how there are ways we can improve it, some of which are in the pipeline already.
But are you also, in terms of actually cutting costs, which is the huge problem you face, are you going to be looking at things like cutting city workers in a city with high unemployment or renegotiating labor contracts, privatizing some city services?
Margaret, everything's on the table. I think under these circumstances, the three things that everybody agrees, two things everybody agrees on, there's a financial emergency in the city. Something needs to be done about it. The question is what? And so what we want to do is take a really extended and granular look at what can be done and what needs to be done, but everything's on the table. I want to make no decisions now because I haven't had an opportunity to look at everything, but we're going to do what makes sense and what's driven by the data.
Governor, the members of the city council who have opposed this, who appealed the decision, who are talking about going to court, say essentially that it's undemocratic to take the power to run the city out of the hands of elected representatives. What do you say to that?
Well, if you look at it, the city is really a subset of the state of Michigan. We're the sovereign entity here, and I'm an elected official. And I'm responsible to all the citizens of Michigan, Detroiters and non-Detroiters. And I am focused on improving the city of Detroit. So there is an elected official in charge of this process. The other thing is if you go back to the consent agreement I worked out with the city in the past, with the mayor and the city council, we all agreed on a series of things that needed to be done. And that's one of the starting points for our continuing efforts, is to say, here's a list of 21 different items that needed to get done. A lot of those are still in process or need to get started. So that's one of the things that clearly needs to happen. And we are all part of that process. The other thing I would mention that was very exciting, and I was proud to have him there, was Mayor Bing was at the press conference.
Absolutely.
To say this is about partnership. This is not about someone versus someone else. This is all of us getting focused then on the citizens, the customers in Detroit, to say how do we give them better services and how do we create a long-term environment of success. Let's solve the short-term problems. Let's grow Detroit.
Mr. Orr, you spoke today about wanting to have a team approach. But what are you going to be taking the views of the members of the city council who really oppose some of these potential steps into account, or can you just override them? Where's the balance there?
Well, I don't think that all the members of the city council necessarily oppose some of these steps. In fact, some of them were baked in to the consent agreement that they all agreed to. So the reality is that I'm just merely a creature of a state statute that allows me to expeditiously bypass some of the impediments to achieving the very goals that many of them have already agreed with. What I'd like to do, though, is as we've seen with the mayor, as we've seen with the governor, who's taken a very courageous step in terms of declaring the emergency, this has been breeding for a long time. In fact, in 2005, there was a discussion of a restructuring. What I'd like to do is embrace everybody in that process to achieve some of the goals and measures that have already been identified in a collegial and hopefully expeditious way.
What is the time frame you've set for yourself, Mr. Orr? And if it comes to that, is bankruptcy, which is certainly what Chrysler did, is that an option?
Well, Chapter 9 is a little different than Chapter 11, but yes, everything's on the table, including the possibility of a bankruptcy. The reason I keep emphasizing the need for all stakeholders to come together and try to reach a consensual agreement is because I think that would be more fair. I think it would be quicker. I think bankruptcy, specifically Chapter 9, could put a little finger on the table in terms of the powers that the municipality has vis-a-vis other stakeholders. So I'd like to get to an agreement fairly quickly. I have 18 months to do it under my appointment. I'm going to enter into discussions with interested parties as soon as I can and as soon as I can inform myself and make an assessment from there going forward. It is my hope that we'll be able to do this collaboratively because the reality is New York and Philadelphia were able to do it that way. In other great cities, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, for instance, 10 years ago were considered in crisis, and look at them now. They're thriving. There's no reason Detroit can't have the same outcome.
So, gentlemen, I'd like to close by asking you both, and I'll begin with you, Governor. Is the underlying message here that when a city is in this much trouble of such long standing, that really only an outside manager with, if not autocratic, then tremendous powers can really do what has to be done?
That's not necessary. It's a situation here where we've got at least 50 years of this problem growing. And a lot of people in good faith in the past have tried to solve it and been unsuccessful. So the way I view it is this is all hands on deck. This is not to exclude people. This is to say the mayor's been working hard on this. A lot of the city council have, many people in the community. And let's add all the resources we can. And this is another tool in the toolkit to bring the powers of the emergency manager and to add this level of expertise. Kevin is one of the finest restructuring bankruptcy people in the country. And let's get them on board, let's go, and let's do this as a team to turn Detroit around because it will be a fabulous outcome and an opportunity for Detroiters, for Michiganders, and our whole country to see Detroit moving in a positive way.
Brief final word from you, Mr. Orr.
No, Margaret, you know, this is an issue and an opportunity whose time has come. And frankly, if we get everybody, as the governor has said, pulling all oars, if you'll excuse the pun, pulling together, we can get this done very quickly. I'm not unmindful, however, that, you know, I'm very comfortable in the bankruptcy courts of America, and they are tremendously talented. They handle cases concerning horse farms all the way to airlines. They would be able to provide some heft and certainly some impetus, but I'm hoping we don't have to go that route. This sounds sort of odd coming from a bankruptcy practitioner, but that's my goal.
Governor Rick Snyder and Kevin Orr, good luck, and thank you so much.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you ever learned is just to love and be loved in return. Thank you.
just to love and be loved in return.
Did you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Now, the more I hear about this Detroit situation, the more it just, you know, it baffles me. They got 18 months, they say. I guess they don't care about citizens in Detroit, but let me go to this town hall meeting. And let's look at this town hall meeting and see what's really going on in the D. What's really going on in the D. And this is Governor Schneider. This is like a week ago, March 5th. This is before everything took place. So I'm trying to give you or him a little benefit of the doubt to see where his opinion is coming from, because you know where my opinion is coming from again. And I was going to play the City of Detroit appeal hearing on the financial emergency finding, but I guess I'll hold that off again. All these are put up here. What I'm placing right now are pro-Governor Schneider's YouTube stuff. So this stuff he's been placing out here to get his message out there. So y'all know that. 347-838-9825. Okay, Detroit, you can give me a call and listen in. It's on you.
Hi there, and thanks for joining us. I'm Christy McDonald, and welcome to Detroit Public Television's live coverage of Governor Rick Snyder's announcement concerning the future of Detroit. We are on the campus of Wayne State University, and the governor is joining us, as well as editorial page editors of the Detroit News and Detroit Free Press, Nolan Finley and Stephen Henderson. We also have an audience of about 30 people who are joining us right now, and once the governor delivers his message about the financial state of the city of Detroit, the audience will get to ask the governor some questions. So let's turn it over now to Governor Rick Snyder. Governor.
Thanks, Christy, and I appreciate everyone coming together to have this discussion today. I look at today as both a sad day, a day that I wish would never have happened in the history of the city, but also a day of optimism and promise. And before I get into the specifics, I think it's important that we all step back and set the stage as to where we've been and where we are, but also where we need to go. If you think about Detroit, Detroit was the most successful city in the United States. For how many years? We put the country on wheels. We put the world on wheels. We're the arsenal of democracy. And in 1950, Detroit had 1.8 million people. At one point, it was recognized as the most prosperous city in the entire United States. And you step back and look at that, and where we are today. If you go across the country and talk to people, there's probably no city that's more financially challenged in the entire United States. If you looked at the quality of services to citizens, it's ranked among the worst. So we went from the top to the bottom over the last 50 or 60 years. It was a long process. And one of the things I would say during this process, even over the last few years, we should waste no time on blame or fighting or discussing how we got there. The point is this is where we're at today. The question is, it's time to say we should stop going downhill. It is time to say we need to start moving upward with the city of Detroit. There have been many good people that have had many plans, many attempts to turn this around. They haven't worked. The way I view it, today is a day to call all hands on deck, to say there's been too much fighting, too much blame, not enough resources, not enough people working together to say, let's resolve these issues. Because the key answer I believe all of us want to get to is growing the city of Detroit. In order to bring all those resources to bear, I believe it's appropriate to declare the city of Detroit in financial emergency based on the review team report. But again, I don't view it as simply looking at the numbers, because if you look at the financial numbers, it's not hard to justify that conclusion. There's a short-term cash crisis. There's long-term liabilities that need to get resolved. There needs to be a structure for long-term success. But again, it's not just about numbers. This is about people. There are 700,000 people in the city of Detroit that are suffering, that we need to turn around. But I would also say, as I've talked about the negative things, we need to remember there are a lot of great positive things going on in Detroit. And the long-term answer to the solution is not to dwell on the negative. We need to use a phrase I live by, relentless positive action. We need no blame, no credit. We need to simply solve this problem and head towards a bright, exciting Detroit. And what does the Detroit of the future look like to me? And again, this is something the citizens of Detroit should define, not me. But what does it look like? We're already seeing exciting things in Midtown, downtown, the riverfront, exciting revitalization. But the only long-term solution to Detroit is to say we can also say those exciting things are coming to the neighborhoods of Detroit, to the people living in those neighborhoods. We need a Detroit where eventually people are moving into the neighborhoods of Detroit because they want to raise their family there. They see real estate that has increasing property value. They see good schools. They see safe schools. We need a Detroit for the people living in Detroit that can say, my kids can get a job so they can buy a good house in Detroit and raise my grandkids in Detroit and be able to have them walk to school and to have that environment for success. If you think about it, over the last few decades, the current system has not been working. We have not stopped the decline. It is time to say this is the time for us not to argue or to blame, but to come together as Detroit, Michigan, not Detroit versus Michigan, and bring all our resources to bear to say, let's just solve the problem. Let's solve the financial issues. Let's solve the service issues. And let's grow Detroit. Now the process. With this determination today, there's a 10-day appeals period that will go through Monday, March 11th, where the mayor and city council can appeal. They have the right. I appreciate it. I'll wait to see what they want to do. If they decide to appeal, there'll be a hearing on Tuesday, March 12th. Following that, I need to make a redetermination to continue this path or to change paths. If I continue on this path, I go to the emergency loan board, who will then select an emergency manager. So that's the process. But beyond the process, beyond the numbers, come back to relentless positive action. Haven't we had enough of people fighting among themselves or blaming someone or watching declining services and watching people suffer? Now is the time to rally together to say there's a new, better way of doing things. And let's build Detroit and do it as a team and be proud and show the rest of the world that Detroit was the best. We know how to do it. We lost that formula, but we can gain it back and do it again. It won't be exactly the same, but it can be that great place where kids can grow up, they can go see their grandparents and have a wonderful life. So thank you.
Governor, you... have declared an emergency and you started this process, you've also, we know you've been interviewing emergency manager candidates. Have you selected a manager, and what skill set were you looking for when you were doing your interviews?
Yeah, Nolan, given the process, it wouldn't be appropriate to select somebody yet because, again, there's a review process. So I want to be open-minded during the review.
But
the,
you have settled on a candidate.
But I do have a top candidate, and we do have additional people that could serve that role. So we have good people that potentially could play this role. The top candidate's outstanding. And the kind of person this individual is someone that's a great people person. They have vast experience working on relationships. They have strong financial knowledge, strong legal knowledge, and that ability to say, how do you build teams and work together? Because we need somebody that's going to make decisions, too. Because one of the issues in Detroit is too often we knew what the problem was. We even had a plan, but the decision wasn't made and action wasn't taken.
Private sector person, in-state, out-state?
Well, I don't really want to speculate on that because, again, I view that as premature. And I know one of the big questions people have are, who is this person? But it wouldn't be appropriate at this time.
So, Governor, you look here at the people who are here. Mm-hmm. Missing is Mayor Dave Bing. Missing are all the members of the Detroit City Council. What would you say to Detroiters about the future of their voice in this, which is typically handled through their elected representatives? Is this sort of the loss of Democratic voice in Detroit?
No, and it doesn't have to be. And if you look at what we've done, Stephen, in other cities, in Flint, in Pontiac, the mayors are active in the city still. The city councils are still meeting and talking about issues. That's the process I would hope that would happen here. Again, that's that whole thing about, do people want to solve problems or do they want to fight about things? And that's what I'm really hoping because, again, there's been good things done by the mayor and city council over the last few months, the last couple months in particular, but they haven't been enough to solve the problem. So let's all keep working together. Let's get – this is another tool and a resource to add a solution.
So you also got several people now running for the job of mayor and city council in November. How long do you anticipate it would be before the mayor and city council might be back in full charge of city government?
Yeah, well, I would expect it's going to be a year and a half or longer. Again, the new statute provides there's an exit point after 18 months.
Sure.
And again, that's where I view it as the people running for office, one thing I would ask them to think about, this shouldn't be about politics, about saying why they don't like something. Shouldn't we all be talking about not the politics of this, but the solution? And the solution is don't we want every resource available that can bring tools, resources, elements, smart answers to get things done and make Detroit a better place faster.
Let's open it up to the people who are here as part of the town hall who has a question for the governor, and I will come find you. Go ahead. Start right here. Go ahead, sir.
Governor Jack Westenberry. Is it realistic to think that 18 months this job can get done by anyone in 18 months, at which time, just before you may be up for re-election, city council can pull the plug?
Yeah, in terms of 18 months is not a long period of time, and this, all the issues in Detroit aren't going to be solved in 18 months. But I think 18 months is a reasonable time frame to say there can be a plan to deal with the long-term liabilities, and a lot of that work done. I think there's plenty of time to say there can be a structural process put in place to say budgets can be done now thoughtfully, and I hope there's a lot of low-hanging fruit to show efficiencies, better ways to operate, to give better services to citizens in that time frame. So I think there's a lot of great things that can be done, and then the real question is how do you transition out again, so the city could come in and get back to normal operations, but in a smarter, better way, in terms of better processes, better systems, because there are some structural problems in Detroit that really have made this much more difficult and have stopped some of the solutions.
Okay, next question. Go ahead, sir.
With respect to revitalizing the city and knowing where the budget is, what is your thinking and what is your plan for public safety, our first responders? And the second part of that, is can we have an expanded EAP program that helps those that have had their salaries cut 10%, loss of overtime, court time, et cetera, that will give them debt management people, debt management services, mortgage modification, other things that help those first responders, given that we can't do anything if we don't have a safe city?
Yeah, well, we need to work on that. And one of the things we're trying to work in partnership, we've been already trying to do that in terms of different state agencies trying to partner with the Detroit Police Department. I think there's some good relationships there. We give you a real-life illustration. The start of this last school year, the Michigan State Police worked with the Detroit Police Department, Wayne State, all those on safe routes to school. So, again, we've not been asked to partner more. And this is really a case of finding more partnership opportunities to really deal with that. Because one of the questions is how do we get more officers out in the front lines, out in the streets, have them get paid a good amount so they can feel good about the work they're doing?
If I could follow that up, Chris.
Yeah.
Chris, public safety is number one issue on the mind of Detroiters. Can we expect a surge in state resources to make people feel safer quickly after the emergency manager is appointed?
Well, I don't know if I'd use the word surge, because I don't want to be viewed as a bunch of Michigan State Police coming into the city. It's really how do we partner with the Detroit Police Department? Because, again, this is about the city running the city, but having more resources, more focused resources, more things to balance that. And that's something we tried to demonstrate with our proposal on Belle Isle, for example. We actually talked about, in this last year's budget message, I talked about a number of state troopers being able to come to police Belle Isle, which would free up Detroit police to go in the neighborhood.
All right, we have another question over here. I'm going to fly through. Go ahead.
Eric Cross. Thank you, Governor. My question is, considering the city is spending about $1.13 million on debt service and bond and pension obligation payments, how do you, in the restructure that needs to be done for the city, are you looking at a dedicated new revenue stream to assist the city during this restructuring period? It's something temporary over maybe a 2-3 year period. And also, debt service payment relief. So that's about $600 million in city payments annually, and growing at a 5% clip. A 6-month debt service payment relief would free up $300 million that could go back into dedicated core services.
Yeah, they go together. And put it in context, this isn't just to do one-time things, but put in a solution that can last longer and to sort of give you a purview using some of the review team kind of numbers. If you looked at the last budget for the city, it was about $1.1 billion. About 30 cents on the dollar are going to legacy costs to deal with these long-term liabilities, and that makes it really difficult, as you said, to provide more current service. So one of the things that needs to happen is all the creditors need to be called to the table to say, can it be renegotiated? Where everyone's involved in that solution, asking something from everyone in the long term to say, this just doesn't work, and get a solution in place that could delay the payments, you know, put a new payment plan in place, potentially relieve some of that, do it in some fashion, so then there are more resources to get us on the right path. That is part of this should be part of the strategy that needs to take place in terms of working through that.
But one of the things you pointed out was the idea of new revenue.
Yeah.
Streams. We've seen recently that one of the most important revenue streams in the city, property taxes, is not working very well at all. Does the city need a way to raise more money than it has right now?
Yeah, what I would say is it could very well involve raising more money, but it's doing it the right way, too. And I think the property tax system is a great illustration of that, that it's from the press accounts, good press work there, it's a totally messed up system. So it's really, let's get good, competent people in there to actually say, how do you actually figure out what is fair valuations, realistic valuations, so people can say, I am paying the right amount, and then make sure people are paying those amounts, and if they can't pay it day one, what's the payment plan to make it work out? Because the thing here is how do you work the right equations here, because recognizing the citizens of Detroit are the customer. They're not just the citizen, they're the customer of the city. So it's recognizing how do you give them good service.
All right, we have a question over here, Governor. Go ahead.
Governor Snyder, Carol Goss. Do you anticipate if the emergency manager moves forward that there would be a process where ordinary citizens could be informed about what's going on and the decisions that are being made and even give some input?
Well, I think that would be an important thing, Carol, in terms of making sure there's great dialogue going on. And that's part of doing this event today. I mean, this wasn't done just as a press conference where I got up and said, here's the answer. I came here today, and I appreciate Nolan and Steven spending the time and all of you coming, because it's a chance to, you know, make sure there is that dialogue and communication going on, and we need to keep that up. This is a case where I'd say we should be biased towards over-communication, because I don't know if that's possible in terms of continuing to give updates, because the scariest thing quite often is when you don't know the answer. Are you not sure what's going on? Because the way I view this emergency manager situation, if we're going on that path, if we end up there, is the greatest anxiety is right now or until the person's actually here or until they've worked for a month. because it's an unknown. Once people know what the situation is and get an idea that all's going to be okay and there's progress, it's a much better situation.
Well, Governor, probably the most anxious people in Detroit right now are the ones sitting at City Hall. What role do you see for the elected officials in all of this?
I think they're going to have an opportunity to define that by how they want to participate in the process. If they want to be part of a constructive solution and work together and say, let's roll up our sleeves and just go to work and focus on solving the problem, I think there's a great opportunity to be involved. If people, whether they're in the city government or not, just want to yell and say it doesn't work or they don't like it and they're not coming forward with any solutions, they're just bringing up problems, I wouldn't expect they're going to have a lot of influence on decisions.
All right, we have a question over here. Governor?
Thank you, Governor. Peter Hammer. I'm an academic and not a politician, but it's hard for me to see somebody give a 50-year retrospective of the needs of Detroit and not talk about issues of race or issues of regionalism. These are deep structural problems that require deep structural solutions, and it's not obvious that an emergency manager frame is the correct one. Why aren't we having a town hall meeting about a regional emergency manager to deal with regional public transportation, regional revenue sharing, and regional reconciliation?
If you look at it, in some ways, some of the regional issues are being addressed. Again, we have legal structures that really put some constraints on it, but that was part of the idea of the RTA, the Regional Transit Authority. That's been missing for 40, 50 years. Well, we put it in place now, and it's working. And one of the things I think you may be excited to see in the future, Peter, is one of the things we're doing in an economic development summit I'm holding statewide in March is one of the topics is regionalism, about doing more work in a regional context and getting regions to work better together. So I also agree that there's more work to be done on regions, and actually we're headed on that path. At the same time, Detroit can't wait. We need to solve real issues here today because citizens are not getting the services they really need, and we have a financial crisis.
All right, we have a question over here.
I'm Robert Allen Davis from Detroit, and I'm a lifelong resident. My concern is that we appreciate the fact that we're at this place. We understand not looking back. But I would like to see a time period in terms of, is there a short punch list of things that the financial manager can complete and then move on? Because we'd hate to see a person come in and stay.
Yeah. No, in terms of guidelines, Robert, what I'd say is the consent agreement had 21 different identified items in a part of the backup of that agreement. That's a good guide to use as a starting point. And just to give you one illustration, if you have a chance to look at the review team, the supplemental report, they actually talk about those 21 items and made the point that, for example, the agreement was signed in April. A whole bunch of those things didn't get started working on until like September. And if you think about it, if the agreement was signed in April, and again, I don't want to be critical here, I would have hoped a whole lot of those could have started working on in April. And so that's part of the point of the emergency manager concept is you don't get the delays, you don't get the lag time. Again, people are going to be welcome to work on projects to solve problems. But let's do it faster and better and get real results in place as quickly as possible to go to your point.
Governor, we have a question over here. Go ahead, ma'am.
Oh, yes, Maria Salinas. In regards to jobs, we have a couple of big projects coming into Detroit, the bridge and an intermodal freight terminal. What is the guarantees that we can get some of those jobs to our residents? The only way we really are going to change Detroit is to get jobs to our residents.
No, jobs are key to the future, and there are some good opportunities already going on, like Detroit Manufacturing System, DMS. I mean, that was a great opportunity that happened this last year from the auto supply world. There's more of those coming. The bridge is a huge opportunity. And to be open with you, I've had discussions with people involved in that process to say we need to be thoughtful about including people from Detroit in terms of are there training programs, are there skilled trade programs to help them get the background and experience, and I've gotten positive feedback from people on that. Right now I'm just waiting for a presidential permit, so if you see the Secretary of State or the President, put in a plug for that permit for me, would you please?
All right, we have a question over here, Governor. Go ahead.
Hi, Governor. Pastor Marcus Ways. With the consent agreement and other activities that come into the city from the review board's decisions, the corporate entities, corporate consultants and companies have been given seemingly almost mandated opportunities to assist in this, in bringing us out of this dilemma. My question is, will there also be same and similar energies and forces behind giving local consultants and local business entities that have great invested interests historically in this city the same opportunity with the same force and thrust almost from a mandated perspective, to help to solve the problem that we're in today also.
Yeah, I think there is a good opportunity to say, let's get people here because you understand the issues well. I mean, being on top of it. I think an illustration would be is I think Roy Roberts has done a major improvement from what went on before with consultants being used with Detroit Public Schools and getting people involved, listening to people, getting it much more focused back on Detroit in terms of people involved in that process. I would hope the similar thing would be true here is to say, you know, if we got great resources here, let's go. The main thing is we just need to go and get stuff done.
Well, you mentioned the Roy Roberts and the schools. That emergency manager has been in place for several years now. You're talking about 18 months, you hope, for this emergency manager. Why should Detroiters believe that this is going to be a in-and-out, quick-and-dirty proposition when they've watched their schools remain under an emergency manager for so long?
Well, it's not just what I say. It will be in the new statute that this will fall under, that there'll be a capability after 18 months for a two-thirds vote to say they want to change the choice. So it's real set. It's not a, you know, something that I can discretionarily say it's different.
All right, let's head on over to this side of the room. We have a question over here. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Larry Simmons. I pastor a church in the Brightmoor community of Detroit. There is a lot of self-help initiative taking place in my community. I'm asking you if it's possible that in whatever course you lead, that you would look beyond just the leadership down to what is actually happening in the neighborhoods by neighborhood groups to do things for ourselves. Because in the end, there's never going to be enough government money to do everything that needs to be done in the city.
No, I agree with you 100%. And we actually have some initiatives that are along that line. Our Pathways to Potential program that we're doing through the Department of Human Services, that we're going to have a number of social workers leaving the state office, and we're going to base them right in the local elementary school or the local school. And we're doing that right now, and I view it as outreaching to the faith-based community to be a great partner in doing this. And I've been happy. I've had some very good meetings with some of your colleagues to say, how can we work together and get your ideas and thoughts? Because I view it as is, the people in the neighborhoods, the communities, the leadership there know what's best for their community in many respects, and how do we marry this all together? So, again, instead of having separate islands of people having different ideas, how do we blend this together? That's the really cool, exciting part here. Just think about the power of Detroit and Michigan just saying, we're not different. We just want to, we can all win together.
We have a few minutes left, Governor, so we want to try to get in two quick questions, and I know that you wanted to say something at the end. Go ahead.
Governor Sheila Cockrell, on the question, though, of at 18 months, the two-thirds vote of council can take out the manager, what then are the responsibilities of that, of the mayor and the council at that time, if that decision were taken?
Yeah, that's something that there are other choices they can make. Consent agreement is on the table. Again, some mediated settlement options. So there are different choices. So there are still things that need to be done. Because one of my concerns that we want to build into the system, Sheila, that the new law talks about is what's the transition? I'll give you one illustration. Is one of the big problems if from the financial report is estimating the right amount of revenue. Because in many cases, the city overspent because the revenue estimate was way out of line. And if you look at the state, we've had a system to do revenue estimating conferences where we come really close because we don't let the political people decide that. There's two or three parties coming together from the different branches to come up with the numbers to say, okay, now, politicians, here's what the number you have to work within and make it work. Those are the kind of reforms we should be looking at for the city in terms of, and any city, in terms of practices that have serious problems so they just don't fall back in the problem again.
We are running out of time, so, Governor, if you'd like to wrap it up.
Great. Well, I really appreciate all of you coming. I know this is a very difficult time. But what I would say is this is not the time for fighting blame. This is a time to say there is a financial emergency in Detroit. I want to solve it. I want to help you solve it. Let's just work together to put a solution in place to say we can be on that path to being a great place again for Midtown, downtown, the riverfront, and the neighborhoods so people can have a great quality of life. And let's just go. So I would appreciate your support in this. And it's about not being quiet, it's about not yelling, but speaking up and taking action. So thank you.
All right, we'd like to thank everyone who came out here today. Steven? And Nolan, thank you very much. Thank you all for watching, and thanks to Wayne State for having us here. For all of us at Detroit Public TV, I'm Christy McDonald. Take care.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam. My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam. My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know, cause you don't feel what I feel.
My part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know, cause you don't live where
I'm from. The place of domestic violence, where the people dying from the self-hatred virus, where the kids go to school and they think learning is cruel. Must forget about the kids in the world with no shoes, a food to eat for a freaking week. We walk around $100 sneakers on our feet and brag and boast in the ghettos as we toast the Patron, claiming streets we don't even own on crone and our.
Yeah, that was my part of town. What do you think? You telling the truth? Would a transition be that easy? What do you think about the questions? Were they poignant? Did the panel answer your questions? Did the questionnaires ask questions that you might wanted to hear about your part of town in the D? Let me take it to, let's find out who the financial manager is. This is Kevin Orr. And he's going to be serving as Detroit financial manager. Now, listen, Governor Snyder has been providing me with a lot of this information for disclosure, you know, so I'm putting it out there. Coleman Young Jr., man, what's up? I'm going to try to reach you out this week, and see what's the situation. You heard how it's going to go down with the financial advisor, the city council, and the mayor. There's an election coming up. I wonder, do we get the answer to the question about whether your vote count? Let's find out what Kevin Orr has to say about it. Being Detroit's financial manager, apologize for that mic feedback, everybody. This is Kevin Orr, acting Detroit financial advisor for, I guess, about the next 18 months. That was too much for me, man. Sorry about that, everybody. Here we go, Kevin Hart. Kevin Orr.
My uncle, when I first came up here to go to school, we weren't didn't have enough funds for me to do school trips. So I came to the University of Michigan sight unseen. Except when I was a kid, my mother got her master's here. And my uncle picked me up from the airport and took me around to try to stay with him that night. And then brought me to school. And for the years that I was here in school, from 1976 to 1983, we would regularly go into Detroit, whether it's Greektown, whether it's Hamtramck, whether it's the Riverfront, Cobo Hall, Joe Louis Arena, whatever for events. Detroit has a special fondness in my life, even when Sparky Anderson was fighting for a pennant back with the Tigers. So I have been affiliated with Detroit physically in mind and spirit for the majority of my life. From 1976, and personally, having done the Chrysler case, you know, we heard a lot of the same sort of things we're hearing now. It's never going to work. In fact, some of the senior executives of the company were of the strong opinion that no one would ever buy a car from a bankrupt automaker. The reality is that company, as well as GM, as well as Ford, are going away gangbusters, have great products. They're expanding. Market share year over year is growing. So I see Detroit, in a sense, as being an opportunity to bring that kind of growth and that kind of renaissance, excuse the pun, the renaissance center, to the city. If we can do this right, you know, this is the Motor City. This is the city that gave us Motown. This is the city that, during the World War II, was the arsenal of democracy. Okay, this city changed the way we live. It gave us automobiles for the last 2 years. It gave us a new way of listening to music. It is a historical city of record in the history of this country. We have to do this. This is a great American city, and we have to get the city on the right track. Well, I hope my relationship with the people of Detroit will become a very close one in a very short time frame. I hope the people of Detroit view me as both a change agent, but also someone who can span the citizenry of Detroit. Now, I've been reading some of the press clippings about what is soon to be my prior job as a corporate attorney at a large corporate law firm. And I hope people recognize, you know, at core, I'm still that young kid who grew up in the tomato fields of Broward County, Florida, and spent my summers on the red clay streets of Altamont Springs at my granddaddy's church, the great Reverend Eugene Jasper Owa, as we say in the South, and that I have not lost reflection of the arc of my life to where I am now from where I came from. So being that being the reality of the matter, I hope the people of Detroit recognize I can sit in any room with anyone and empathize with where they are. That ability hopefully will inform decisions I make, or at least allow me to communicate across all strata. I would like to think of myself as having the capacity to bring Detroit together truly in that sense, as long as we're operating in good faith. We're America. Send people to the moon. We built the Hoover Dam. We can do anything we want to do if we operate in good faith. I've been a member of a number of progressive organizations throughout my professional career. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I participated in voter protection both for John Kerry and President Obama. Voting rights, obviously, coming from the South, my grandmother was born in 1898. She walked the Seaboard Coastline Railroad tracks every day, back and forth, rain or shine, hot or cold, to her job. And one thing she did until she died at 85 was to vote. So in a very real sense to me, she had an eighth grade education, but in a very real sense to me, the issues of depriving people of their voting rights or representative voice resonates with me. However, we are a country of laws, not of men. The role that I'm undertaking is a creature of state statute and has been longstanding. And the concepts of reorganization, conservatorship, receivership, trusteeship have existed since good King George began granting tariffs and commissions in the colony. So while I understand there's a lot of concern and emotion behind the concept that I'm depriving people of certain rights, actually it's very consistent with both the history of the country and in specific. In this state, emergency managers laws have existed in their current iteration from 1980, which has been almost over 30 years, or from the act that I'm going to be appointed under 1990 for almost 25 years. I would hope that people recognize that in the state, both behind Democratic governors and Republican governors, emergency managers have been appointed in five cities and four school districts. So this is, while unusual and of concern, it's very common, and it's longstanding. I'd say my top priority is, you know, getting boots on the ground, and use the mixed metaphor, in the saddle, and get to the data. I've obviously been trying to get briefed as best I can on sort of the status, and I've been drinking through a fire hose with a number of different information, but I'd really like to verify the information impressions I have. There are some issues, principally due with delivering services to the consumers and customers of the city, the citizens, that I'd like to get to, and whether that's lighting, enhanced public safety and security, enhanced EMT response times, things along those lines, that frankly would be my first priority. Number one, is there a financial emergency? Everyone says yes, even the people who hate to admit. Number two, should something be done about it? Everyone says yes. So the third prong of the issue is, what are we going to do about it? Well, I'm the conduit, I'm the tool to do something about it. So for the people of Detroit, what they should expect is, I'm going to try to apply, the governor says relentless positive action, I just say I'm going to work through the data. I'm going to try to make reasoned, rational decisions based upon the facts, based upon the need and the current realities on the ground, which everyone admits and agrees needs to have something done about it. And if I can do that, people of Detroit should expect reasoned, fact-based decision-making based on the data. I will try to be empathetic to the real-world consequences of any decision I make. That's my goal. But the decisions are going to be driven by externalities and realities that exist and everybody agrees to.
That's the financial advisor, emergency financial manager. But Detroit, Kevin Orr. Let me get one more Kevin Orr cut for you, and then I'll wrap everything up from that point on. This is WXYZ Channel 7, and we're going to go from there. WXYZ, this is, like I said, the governor's been providing me with a lot of information. I guess people from my party have been sending me things to make sure the right stuff gets out there. But you know how I feel about Detroit, so let's go on ahead and see what WXYZ is talking about. Get the clip right here. All right, this is March 14th, everybody.
We are joined now by Governor Rick Snyder and Kevin Orr. It's good to have you both with us. Can you hear us clearly?
Yes. Ken, it's great to be with you.
Hi, Glenda. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, good afternoon to you. And, Mr. Orr, we will begin with you. We know we heard you talk about Miami, Florida, and you were headed there to open up a new office. And here you are, your call to duty, as I heard you say, to be in Detroit. Is it really your call to duty, really your love? You're just here for the people.
Well, it's a call to action. I mean, it's a tremendous challenge for a restructuring professional. But more importantly, I was just impressed by the groundswell of good faith between the governor, the mayor, the citizens, the emails I've gotten since my name surfaced earlier this week. You know, there are times that I prefer a call to action. There are times that you're called to do things that may seem a little counterintuitive at first, but it's just the right thing to do at the right time. And I really do believe this is one of those times.
Governor, you said today this is not about asking anyone to step aside. It's about all hands on deck. We know the mayor's in. We saw him with you both today. But have you heard from anyone on council, either of you? And what do you envision their role in this process?
Well, I hope they define a role for themselves that's a positive one, because this is a situation where we know the problems. And so the issue isn't, we don't need people dwelling on the problems or talking about the past or blaming people. I'm asking the city council to come forward and join the mayor and join Kevin and join myself and join all of us on saying, here are solutions to problems that will move Detroit forward. Let's move Detroit forward and solve these problems and be a great city again. I'm ready to go.
You know, we understand, though, that under the EFM law that they can be brought in and not have a salary. I guess, Mr. Ari, I ask you, if they are willing to play ball and they want to be part of this team, will they continue to be paid, or is it too early to say?
You know, it's really too early to say. And plus, I'm not looking at it as sort of a binary this or that sort of proposition, that if you work with me, you get paid. If you don't, you don't. I'm not approaching it that way. I mean, the whole issue of the council cooperating, hopefully, is because it's in the best interest of the city. I'm only here for 18 months. I'm not supplanting democracy or the role of the council. I'd like their assistance because, frankly, they live here. They know the city. I need their assistance. But I am going to look at the data, and all things are on the table, so I don't want to appear to be doctrinaire one way or the other. It's going to be a reasoned decision, but I see no need starting out to approach it from that sort of perspective that it's either or. I really do want this to be a collaborative effort.
And, Mr. Orr, we did hear you say this is like the Olympics of restructuring. Do you think it can be done in that 18 months?
Oh, goodness, yes.
Okay.
I mean, we were able to Detroit is the arsenal of democracy. Do you know the kind of production that this city put out in the effort of World War II in 18 months and lend-lease? The ability of this country to turn around, and this city in particular, the assembly line, people of good faith in America, we live in a great country at a great time. People of good faith in America can do anything they want to if they work together, put people on the moon if they want to. Absolutely, it can be done.
And so, Governor Snyder, what will we have to do now? Let's remind us and the public of what the next step is for Mr. Orr.
Yeah, that process is along now in terms of the emergency loan board has met. They have approved Kevin taking the position. He has an agreement now that he needs to review and sign. He's resigning his firm tomorrow.
Yes.
And moving forward, and he has an effective date of March 25th. So I think all things are moving forward. We're on a path, and I think you're going to see him having lots of dialogue with the mayor, other people in the community, the city, to make sure we're coming up with that list of action items that can be implemented as quickly as possible. Let's get going.
You got it. We thank both of you for taking the time to talk to us tonight. Kevin Orr, welcome to Detroit, and Governor Rick Snyder,
thank you so much
for being with us.
Okay. Let's check out protest.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Good afternoon to you, Glenda. As expected, Governor Rick Snyder decided to make that announcement today of an emergency financial manager for Detroit. He named Kevin Orr in that role. And the governor got the support of Detroit Mayor Dave Bing, but it didn't make everybody happy, that announcement. Enter 7 Action News reporter Cheryl Choden with that side of the story. Who's unhappy today, Cheryl?
Well, there were protesters out in front of the Cadillac Place, Jeff. They say that an EFM is not the Democratic way, and they plan to fight even having him here in Detroit. They are Detroiters determined to fight the EFM every step of the way. Organized by the National Action Network, they say they will demonstrate wherever and whenever the emergency financial manager is making a move.
This is a total attack on democracy. This is a total attack on the citizens of Detroit.
We don't need it. We don't need it. It's a takeover. It's all a plot. It's been a plot from the beginning. Some people you can snow, some you can't. I'm one, you can't. From what I've seen, emergency managers do no good to a city. More than 200 of them gathered out in front of the Cadillac Place while the governor was upstairs introducing Detroit's EFM.
This is really bad. This is a bad law, and I don't think that it could stand up anywhere.
There was a lone supporter of the EFM at the rally.
Mr. Snyder will not take the water board. Mr. Snyder will not take the bailout. Mr. Snyder will not destroy families by busting the union.
But two women who do not want an EFM did it in song.
We don't need a dictator here, so get out of our way. Emergency manager Rick Snyder ignored that we voted you down yesterday.
Now, some of these protesters have even reached out to the U.S. Attorney General asking him to intervene. They say they will join every lawsuit. They say they will continue to protest to demonstrate on the streets and on the freeways. Reporting live in Midtown, I'm Cheryl Choden. Jeff, back to you.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam. My part of town is similar to Vietnam. My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know,
girl,
you don't feel what I feel.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know, girl.
From the place of domestic violence, where the people dying from the self-hatred virus, where the kids go to school and they think learning is cruel. Must have got about the kids in the world with no shoes, a food to eat for a freaking week. We walk around $100 sneakers on our feet and brag and boast in the ghettos as we toast the Patron, claiming streets we don't even own, on crone in our home. I'm devoid of a father figure. That's why the brothers be out here like I'm a
gangsta nigga.
Learn your history lesson. Learn how they slaughtered and murdered our ancestors. Now that's gangsta how they did our ancestors. Now you ain't a gangsta cause you say it on the record, huh? The real gangsta, you fakers, are the automakers and the bankers that still owe us 40 acres.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You
don't tempt me, getting paid, but really, pockets is empty, ain't that strange? Across 8 Mile, it's calm. Detroit is more similar to Vietnam. And the unified niggas is a hard-ass job. We want to live in these slums and let our sounds go. Boom, boom, dumb when we young. Be damned if it's one of my sons not come where I'm from.
Where you from?
And take a walk down Murder Lane on the Ave, where the girls are insane. With the sag, I hate on the flag. How long will this foolishness last? Can you add, do the math, huh? Fast food plus some cartoons, plus the lack of love, equal kids so rude. Parents too soon, killing to get more.
Get money.
We're spiritually poor, this is war.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know, girl, you don't feel what I feel.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You
around here ain't nobody hiring. How about they come to your crib and steal your copper wiring?
or even worse off, get the firing. Have you down chasing pavement cause your car they're admiring. I bet you wouldn't think it's over then. Tough times turn warm hearts to colder men. And it ain't just the youth, it's the older men. Exploding after so long from holding in. Pain stains the heart till you can't smile. And Vietnam ain't got nothing on Finkel to 8 Mile. It's enough to make your bones quiver. I'm surprised they ain't put battleships in the Detroit River. This ain't living, this is hell. People feel like they living in a prison, no different than a cell. Cause they scared to walk the streets they dwell, wondering if they gonna be another innocent kill. Cause cats lost consciousness, they killing that will. Whatever happened to the love revealed? Let's bring it back, huh?
My part of town, my part of town. It's similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
You're gonna work for me until I tell you to quit.
You don't own me, pig, and no motherfucker tells me when I can split.
Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
I'm talking to you, redneck faggot.
Here I sit, eating Christmas dinner leftovers. Constantly toting bullshit on my shoulders. I'm frigid. Heart keeps getting colder. Solving the case, the truth is getting closer. Shit on these dudes on the bus to your Range Rover. Similar to Jigga on niggas, I take over. Mr. 4655, please move over. Always survive the floods of madness like Noah. White boy goose and your crew, a bunch of jokers. This goes for all of y'all, I'm hanging up wanted posters. Mad coy won't happen until if you get focused. Play the enemy and feel the wrath of Black Sosa. Fuck your best friend over the sofa. Bender over. Kids were sleeping, had to sneak out. Beautiful weekend. And if she was to call now, I would do it again. Violent bars, so please stop with the grins. You whispering niggas bleed milk like Sean Penn. Eyes to the sky like God, where have you been? They got kids, instead I kill them with a pen. Fuck all you bitter bitches who can't recognize we're men. I'm bitten, a few names will be mentioned. If you cross that line, I will attack, no restrictions. Steven, I would have took you off this planet if it wasn't for your cousin. While all you young niggas wanna die trying to prove something. Fumbling niggas can't handle me. On 131, he created a masterpiece. I ask myself, why the fuck are y'all mad at me? Don't be surprised when I start speaking my piece. Kids, mama talking shit, wanna check her cavities. Nah, I won't do the penitentiary. I apologize for my people. I owe money. Mayday, mayday, they burned down the cafe. Damn.